It's just after 8 o'clock. This is regional news for the Western Slope. I'm Travis Bubinick. A Mesa County judge has ruled Heather Jensen will stand trial in Grand Junction. That's despite defense attorneys' attempts to have the trial moved. Jensen has pleaded not guilty to two charges of criminally negligent homicide, along with two counts of child abuse, resulting in death and false reporting in the death of her two sons. The arrest warrant affidavit in the case alleges Jensen left the two boys unattended in a vehicle with the heater running in November of last year. As the Grand Junction Daily Sentinel reports, District Judge Valerie Robinson denied a motion to move the trial after Jensen's defense claimed excessive media attention in the case could influence the jury. Robinson said the defense hadn't met the legal steps needed to move the trial. Under state law, the defense needs to submit at least one more affidavit to support their case for having the trial moved. Robinson's ruling stated the defense had, quote, failed to make the required showing to move the trial. And she also said the defense hasn't yet tried to select a jury, saying that the court couldn't determine whether Jensen would face prejudice in the trial without receiving some responses from potential jurors about the issue. According to the Sentinel, Robinson also said in a separate ruling that she'll wait until the trial to decide whether two points of testimony can be heard by the jury. The defense team has sought to keep the jury from hearing testimony about Jensen leaving her children unattended in a car prior to the day her two sons died, as well as testimony about Jensen's past use of opiates. Water has always been a source of conflict in the arid West, but in recent years the conflict between agriculture and growing cities has escalated as both entities compete for this limited resource. KGNU's Maeve Conran has this story as part of the year-long series Connecting the Drops.
Since the early 90s, the rate of population growth in Colorado has exceeded the national average. And since the year 2000, nearly 1 million people have migrated to the Centennial State. Demographers expect that trend to continue, reaching a total of nearly 6 million people by the end of the decade. This growth is expected mostly in the Northern Front Range and will continue to put even more pressure on an already scarce resource.
Agriculture has a big target on it to create water supply for urban areas, the growth in urban areas.
Jim Pokrant with the Colorado River District doesn't mince words in describing where growing cities are finding new water supplies.
There are willing ranchers and farmers who are willing to sell their water to the cities.
In Colorado, water rights are like property rights. They can be bought and sold. The problem is when water rights are sold, agriculture stops on the land. No water, no farming. It's a practice that's called agricultural water transfer, but it's more commonly known as buy and dry.
It takes a lot of water to produce a ton of alfalfa, and so it makes it easier for cities and municipal and industrial users to buy agricultural water and dry up agricultural land.
That's Carlisle Currier, a fourth-generation rancher on the Grand Mesa, overlooking Palisade. His great-grandfather came to Mesa County in 1891, and he farms land that has been in his family for more than 100 years. Currier also farms land owned by the Ute Water District, which provides water for Grand Junction and much of the Grand Valley. But the land hasn't dried because Currier has other water rights he can use on the farm.
You know, while we hate to see water going to municipal providers out of agriculture, at the same time, it's been a good deal for me.
But that's not been the fate of thousands of acres of agricultural land in the state. Agricultural water rights in some parts of Colorado can fetch thousands of dollars per acre foot. As Jim Pokrant explains, for some farmers struggling to make ends meet, it's a bittersweet deal that's often too good to pass up.
It's a double-edged sword in a sense where the rancher wants to be able to sell his or her water right, but then there's also the concern in the ranching and farming community that, you know, we need to keep land in production.
And it's that long-term impact on farming that has many people concerned. Buy and dry has been more prevalent on the Front Range, where most urban development is happening. In the 1980s, the city of Aurora bought water rights to dozens of farms in the Rocky Ford area, leaving dried-up farmland in its wake. Similarly, in the Northeast, Thornton bought 120 farms in the region for their water rights in 1986. Brian Werner with Northern Water, has been following the buy and dry phenomenon for 30 years. He says the Thornton water grab raised some alarm bells in the local agricultural community.
It caused some panic at that point. Our water supply could be sold off. It could go to the Denver metropolitan area. Do we want to keep it in northern Colorado?
Werner sees economics as the primary reason farmers sell their water.
Right now, the price of water in northern Colorado has doubled in 2013. Okay, so it comes to a point where the farmer says, boy, do I sell it at this price and go to Tahiti for the year or retire comfortably, or do I still struggle with trying to produce a crop with everything that Mother Nature has to offer, whether it's drought or flood?
Approximately 80% of the state's water goes towards agriculture, but that number is declining. In 1957, 85% of water rights on the Colorado Big Thompson Project in northern Colorado were owned by farmers. Today, Werner says that number is 33%.
There are farmers that look at their water supply as their 401k. It is how they're going to retire, and you aren't going to take that away from them, nor do we want to. But they're still 600,000, 700,000 irrigated acres in northern Colorado in the northeastern quadrant that are producing a lot of wealth for the state of Colorado. So there's a huge economic impact with that as well.
Werner and others advocate for increasing water storage in the state as an alternative to buy and dry. But reservoir expansion in Colorado has prompted opposition by many environmental groups. Werner says if municipalities don't get the water from storage, they'll buy it from the farms, drying up the land.
We're not going to stop buying dry. That isn't going to happen. But what we hope to do is make sure that that's not the only alternative for our future growth.
Other alternatives include creating conservation easements to help protect water supplies. Also, instead of selling outright, some farmers are leasing a portion of their water rights to local cities. Water managers and farming advocates throughout the state do agree that long-term solutions must be sought if the state's farming industry is to be protected and the state's growing population is to have enough water. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio and Connecting the Drops, I'm Maeve Conran.
Connecting the Drops is a year-long collaboration between Rocky Mountain Community Radio stations and the Colorado Foundation for Water Education. You can find out more about the series at yourwatercolorado.org. The Denver Post reports 99.7% of contributions to campaigns against proposed fracking regulations came from the Colorado Oil and Gas Association. According to the Post, the association donated more than $604,000 to groups opposing fracking regulations. The money is nearly 40 times what supporters of fracking limits have raised. Most of that money has been spent by the Denver-based pro-industry group IQ Strategies. Former State Representative B.J. Nickel is the firm's campaign advisor. She says groups like hers are defending mineral rights and the oil and gas industry's economic interests. Nickel said proposing fracking limits are, quote, bad for the cities. As the Post reports, the city of Lafayette recently proposed a charter amendment that would permanently ban natural gas and oil extraction within city limits. Measures in Broomfield, Boulder, and Fort Collins would set a five-year moratorium on fracking. More than 500 medical marijuana dispensaries across the state are eligible to start selling retail pot on January 1st. One of those is Leaf Aspen, currently a medical marijuana shop on the Western Slope. Next year, Leaf Aspen plans to sell both recreational and medical pot. Their storefront is in Aspen, and the owner grows marijuana at a storage unit in Carbondale. Aspen Public Radio's Marcy Krivenin took a tour.
So this is our grow, our OPC, off-premise cultivation. You just walk past three cameras coming in the door.
Jesse Miller leads me through an expansive and fragrant storage unit in Carbondale that feels more like a factory. He's co-owner of Leaf Aspen, a medical marijuana grower and dispensary. The business also sells marijuana-infused products to dispensaries around the state. Here, nearly 500 marijuana plants are nurtured to maturity, so their harvested buds can be sold at Leaf's storefront in Aspen. The process starts in what's called the clone room. Miller points to a set of baby marijuana plants.
We take these and cut them off of a growing plant,
treat it, pop it in here, and they grow roots.
These small plants are then potted individually and put beneath so-called grow lights. The little cuttings are more susceptible to disease than their older counterparts, so Miller watches them closely. From here, the plants move across the hall into what's called a veg room, where the temperature is closely monitored and fans constantly circulate air. The plants live here anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks.
These guys are pretty new. They just got put in here. These have been in here a couple weeks. We can come in, cut this off, and make clones out of these, or move them once they get to a certain size. We move them down into flower.
Downstairs, the flower room is where the plants ultimately grow to maturity. Special care is given at this stage to regulate humidity and light.
And they don't start producing flowers till we move them down here. They're all tagged, say what the strain is, when they went in, and what patient each plant is actually dedicated to.
Miller and his staff grow marijuana for about 50 patients, although they only get a certain amount of the harvest. 30% can be sold to other stores around the state. Local patients get the rest. In one of three flower rooms, Miller estimates about 9 pounds of marijuana will be harvested. The next stop for the marijuana is a quieter room at the end of the hallway.
So the plants come in here, we cut them down, and trim up the buds, store them on these racks so that they can cure and dry out.
In the middle of the room, employee Mark Simpkins is focused, carefully trimming green and purple buds.
I'm just trimming all the leaves off, so you end up with just a solid bud with no leaf on it.
Customers want as little leaf and stem in the bag as possible because the leaves are harsh tasting, says Simpkins. Despite the trimmings, Jesse Miller says nothing is wasted.
We're not losing any of the material through, you know, trimming it and all that, because we have an MIP license and we process it through our MIP.
The MIP, or Marijuana Infused Products License, allows them to develop products like hash oil and butter. That kind of production happens in a separate room that looks more like a science lab than a marijuana grow site. Leaf Aspen will likely have to increase its production area once it starts selling retail marijuana next year. Miller says adding recreational is a no-brainer.
We think the retail numbers are going to be triple what medicinal is in terms of sales. So just from a numbers standpoint, it makes sense.
He thinks his shop in Aspen will draw business from tourists. It'll be a needed jolt because right now he says business is tough because of competition and rising fees.
The taxes are going up. Our profits are going down. A lot of landlords the second and third year in come in and they want to raise the rent because everybody thinks we're just rolling in cash. The one thing I think retail will help that whole supply and demand issue, and prices will probably start to creep upwards a little bit.
Right now, the business is searching for a new spot to grow additional plants for the retail end. The store in Aspen will also add a cash register, one for medical patients and another for those buying marijuana recreationally. Marcy Grivenin, Aspen Public Radio News.
You're listening to KVNF, Mountain Grown Community Radio. Stay tuned for the sports report. For KVNF News, I'm Travis Bubinick.
Greetings and good morning. This is Eric Gould with your KVNF sports report for Friday, October 18th. The 1A Western Slope League title is on the line tonight in the prep football game of the week at Hotchkiss High School. The Paonia Eagles will take on the Hotchkiss Bulldogs in a game that renews a rivalry that goes deep into the history of the North Fork Valley. While these teams have met on the gridiron several times in the past decades, seldom has there ever been an even-matched contest with so much on the line. Both teams are 6-1 overall and have perfect league records at 3-0. The game is listed in the Denver Post as a game to watch, and the Post ranks Paonia number 7 in the state and Hotchkiss number 3. The winner of this game will control its own destiny in terms of winning the league championship. Paonia is led by sophomore Taylor Walters, who has rushed for 1,289 yards this season and has scored 16 touchdowns. Hotchkiss runs a balanced offense behind junior quarterback Devin Roop, who leads a Bulldogs team that has outscored its opponents 231-97 this year. The so-called North Fork Bowl has been dominated by Hotchkiss in recent memory. In the last 9 years, Hotchkiss is 7-2 against Paonia and has outscored the Eagles 143-20 since 2010. The last time Paonia beat Hotchkiss, this year's senior class was in the sixth grade. All of those records will mean nothing when this game kicks off tonight at 7 p.m. in Hotchkiss. Not to be forgotten are the defending 1A state champs, Cedar Edge. The Bruins are 5-2 overall and are at second place in the league with a 2-1 record. Cedar Edge is at Lake County tonight. Other games around the listening area include matchups between old rivals. 3A Delta will host the number one team in the state, unbeaten Palisade, at 7 p.m. tonight. The Montrose Indians, ranked number one in 4A, played at 5A Grand Junction last night. The Paonia girls volleyball team, still undefeated, returns home tomorrow night for its annual Pink Night fundraiser for Delta County Hospice. Paonia beat Vale Christian and Meeker on the road last week and improved to 16-0, including 7-0 in Western Slope League play. Pink Night is held every October in honor of Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Paonia will play Rangeley in the match, which begins with C-team action at 1 p.m. on Saturday, with varsity contests scheduled for 2 and 3 p.m. at Paonia High School. And that concludes your sports report for Friday. If you like sports coverage here at KVNF, please consider making a pledge during the Fall Pledge Drive by calling 527-4868. The weekly sports report is also online at kvnf.org, where you can make a pledge as well if you wish. For KVNF Mountain Grown Community Radio, this is Eric Gould saying good luck to all the teams in our listening area, and thanks so much for listening.